So I've written down the structure of the lectures for the first 2 weeks. I'll be teaching the first 2 weeks, and then Xiaogang Wen will give us the third week. So in the first week, we'll see a number of different sections. We'll start introducing basics of entanglement. Ground states, then we'll talk about ground states of local Hamiltonians. And then we'll move to considering many-body systems, particular examples of wave functions of many-body systems that will give us some intuition about how entanglement scales in a many-body system in general. This will be balanced bond solids and free fermions. And then we'll talk about entanglement and universality. The second week, we'll talk about tensor networks. And I'll leave the details for the second week. But let me tell you what the goal, the general goal of this course is. So the main idea is that we have the Hamiltonian, a many-body Hamiltonian. Say on a lattice. In some number of dimensions. Could be one dimension, two dimensions, etc. And that could be a generic Hamiltonian for a many-body system. It could be a system of spins, interacting spins. Could be fermions hopping on a lattice. Could be bosons. And then we'll have, yeah, this lattice could be infinite. So the question is, how do we address, we will be interested in understanding the properties of the ground state of this many-body Hamiltonian. And as you probably know, the vector space for a system of n spins has a dimension that grows exponentially with n. So if we have n spins, the vector space dimension, the dimension of the vector space that we need grows as, say, 2 to the n for spin 1/2 particles. So this dimension is very large. And in general, we don't know how to compute the ground state. We don't know how to even represent it. And so what we're going to do in this course, at least the first 2 weeks, is first, during the first week, we're going to learn about properties. So this is going to be part one. We're going to learn about general properties of ground states of local Hamiltonians. What I mean by this is we are not going to be interested as much as in specific properties of a given ground state, but generic properties that all ground states of many-body Hamiltonians in the dimensions have in common. And in particular, we'll look at the structure of entanglement. And of correlations. Okay? So the plan then is to spend a whole week trying to understand what it is that all these ground states that in principle we don't even know how to represent because we have a computational issue here that we would need exponentially many parameters. So with current computers, if n is on the order of 30 or smaller, we can still simulate a system of, say, 30 spins with a big computer, but typically we'll be interested in systems maybe in the thermodynamic limit. So n, we are really interested in the limit of very large n. And for those cases, we don't have a generic wave function. We don't have the ability to represent it, okay? So what we want to do in the first week of this course is to learn about generic properties of such ground states. We want to build some intuition about the structure of entanglement and correlations. And then in the second part of the course, in the second week, we'll use this, what we've learned during the first week. So in part two, we'll then exploit the structure of entanglement and correlations in ground states to build efficient representations of these wave functions. So we'll see that we don't need we'll see that instead of using order 2 to the n parameters, we can actually represent most ground states of local Hamiltonians, of many-body Hamiltonians in the dimensions, using instead order n parameters. Okay? So if the computational resources that we need grow only linearly in n as opposed to exponentially in n, if that's the case, then we don't have problems anymore to study very large systems. Any questions so far? Okay. If there are no questions, then let's get started with the first with basics of entanglement. Here I'm going to consider the case where we have n equal to 2 spins, or a lattice with 2 sides, so a simple case. And there is probably some overlap between what I'm going to explain and what you've seen in possibly quantum information courses, but I prefer to at least introduce the notation. So let's even start with n equal to 1. So we have a vector space for our quantum system that I'm going to assume is described by complex numbers, n complex numbers. So think of this as a n level. N-level quantum system. And so we know that a generic state of this system, we can express it as a linear combination of some orthonormal bases and then some complex coefficients. And we'll often assume that the wave function is normalized to 1, and that means that the sum of these coefficients, the square of these coefficients, is 1. Okay? So just setting the notation here. And let's jump directly into n equal to 2 then. So this could correspond, say, if n is equal, this could correspond to quantum spin for, in the case where this is C2, that would be a spin 1/2 particle. Now let's suppose that we have 2 of such systems. So n equal to 2, sorry. And in that case, we'll talk about part A and part B, systems A and B. And so I'm going to assume here that the vector space that describes one of the systems, A, is the same as the vector space describing the other one, and they are both n-level systems. And you know from quantum mechanics that in this case, the vector space, let's see how this works, that in this case, the vector space, Hilbert space that we need to represent in order to represent states of these 2 quantum spins would be the tensor product of A and B. Okay? So Cn times Cn. We can, if we had the basis already for one of the systems, then let's define basis for A and a basis for B. And then we can express a generic state of these 2 systems, A and B, as a linear combination of basis states with coefficients, with complex coefficients. Okay? So I'm assuming there is nothing new here, but I'm using the opportunity to introduce the notation I'm going to use. And when we have a pure state of a bipartite system, well, or a system of 2 parts, I'm going to call this bipartite pure state. Okay, and we'll spend this first hour talking about properties of bipartite pure states mostly. And I need to introduce a bit more of notation. So you, I'm assuming that you are also familiar with the reduced density metrics. Dennis, can you confirm that? So what I want to do now is I want to study or just remind you of how we describe if we have a system AB, so a composite system, in a bipartite state such as this one, if we want to study only properties of subsystem A, then we can use the reduced density metrics. For part A, and this is defined as trace over B, partial trace over part B of this state, and then this is nothing but sum over J of IB Oh, maybe I should mention that I've prepared some notes for this first lecture. Danny, is that something they know, or? No, no, right, but there are some notes online that will be available to them. Yeah, okay, right, okay. So, well, then let me just remind you of this, which this is the definition. We're tracing out over the degrees of freedom in system B, and what you obtain then is, if you do that, then, well, sum over J, we obtain this expression, and that's what we call reduced density metrics. these are the elements of this reduced density metric. So we have rho A ij is equal to sum over ak, sum over j. Okay. So this object is very useful because any property that we want to measure only subsystem A will be given in terms of this object, of the reduced density metrics. We don't need to know anything about what's happening on part B if in computing expectation value of an observable that is supported only on part A. Good, so it turns out that the reduced density metrics will play a very important role in describing entanglement of this bipartite state. And just for completeness, let me write also the trace over, so the reduced density matrix for part B, which is analogous to this one, to rho A, and in this case we get sum over I, A I J, A I, L, and then J B L B. All right. So let me check that that looks correct. So then we can proceed. We can go and start defining what is an entangled state, what is not an entangled state, and then we'll look into how to measure entanglement. That's empty. So we'll say that a state, pure state, bipartite pure state, is a product state if it can be written as the tensor product of state for part A and state for part B. Okay, and we'll say that state, it's an entangled state. If it cannot be written in this way. All right, and now just to make sure that we're following this, I'll write a few examples, and I would like you to tell me whether they are entangled or not. The first one, if you want, I'll do it for you. This one here, where we can write state part A and part B in state 1 and 1, that's a product state. That would be an example. Now, an example of an entangled state would be this one. Okay. And now I'm going to ask you, well, this is an entangled state because one can show that there is no way to write it, as a product state. But this might seem quite simple, but it's actually a bit more complicated than it looks like. First question I want to ask you is, what about this state? Is it an entangled state or is it a product state? Sorry? Why is that? So this is equal to 1 plus 2 times 1. So this is a product state in it. Thanks. Okay, so I'm glad this was so simple. What about the state? I'm going to switch a bit notation, but I'm sure it's not hard to follow. What about this state? Is it product or is it entangled? It's entangled. Why is it entangled? I cannot, but maybe somebody can. So how do you know it's entangled? Okay, so you could compute the reduced density matrix. Did you do that already, or? Okay, so there will be ways of finding out. But I'm just saying that it's not so obvious in most cases. And finally, for instance, we could ask about this one. Right? Is this one entangled, or is it a product state? Is it a product state? Who said that? Right, so the rule is simple, right? If you succeed at writing it as a product state, then you know it's a product state. But what if you fail? Okay. Good. So this one we don't know, but Yang thinks that it's an entangled state. Okay, so let me define a couple of states that we will follow for a while later on. I'm going to define this particular state that I'm going to call singlet. It's an entangled state of two-level systems, two qubits. And I'm going to define it in this way. So there I was not taking care of normalization of the state, now I do. Maybe you are used to seeing this state also written as spin up, down, minus spin down, up, or even 0, 1, minus 1, 0. This is just notation, okay? I'm going to use this notation. And then let me also define what I'm going to call a maximally entangled state of Cn times Cn. And this will be, I'll use this notation, plus sub n. And then in particular for phi plus 2, that would be a maximal entangled state of 2 qubits, we would have this. All right. And just for later reference, let me compute the reduced density matrices for this state. For instance, I'm going to take psi minus. Of psi minus, let's compute rho A and rho B. And if you do that, you realize that we get one half of the identity operator. Okay. And if we now do it for phi 2 plus, so another entangled state, I mean, maybe the interesting observation is that these two states, the singlet state of psi minus and phi plus 2, these guys are orthogonal. Okay, so they are orthogonal states. They are very different. But nevertheless, when we compute the reduced density matrices for them, we get exactly the same result. So what this example tells us is that when we have an entangled state, if we just look at the reduced density matrix A or B or both, okay, just by looking at the reduced density matrices, we cannot tell apart two states which are orthogonal to each other. Okay, so when we trace out and we look at the system just locally, we've lost information about the global wave function, the state of the whole system. Okay, so we'll keep going back to these states, and we'll use them to illustrate other things. So now let me talk about Schmidt decomposition. And I'll start by just reminding you of the eigenvalue decomposition, not the singular value decomposition. So what we're trying to do here now is we're trying to find some way of studying entangled states. We said an entangled state is a state that cannot be expressed as a product state, but what else can we say about it? Are all entangled states equivalent to each other, or are there states which are more entangled than others? And in order to do that, we need to introduce some formalism. One thing that will help us a lot is the Schmidt decomposition that I will introduce in 5 minutes. But before I do that, I want to talk about a singular value decomposition of a matrix, because we will see that it's closely related to this, the Schmidt decomposition. So singular value decomposition. Suppose that we have, and this is sometimes called SVD, singular value decomposition. So we consider an M times N matrix. And now the singular value decomposition is a canonical way of writing any matrix in terms of a product of three other matrices, where U is a unitary matrix. So it's a US unitary, let's see. So it's an M times N unitary matrix. And then we have that V is also unitary. It's N times N. And then we have that S is diagonal. So S is of the form I'm going to assume here that just for concreteness that M is larger or equal than N. And then we have that this diagonal matrix will have some, well, it's diagonal everywhere, and then down here has more zeros. So this should be M, and this should be N. Excellent. So this is a result, basic result from linear algebra. If you give me any matrix, M times N, I can always write it in this way, as a product of a unitary matrix, a diagonal matrix, and another unitary matrix. And what I forgot to say is that these guys here, these entries, Si are positive, are non-negative, so either zero or positive, real numbers, and they are known as singular values. These are the singular values of M, of the matrix M. Now, why am I telling you all this? Well, it turns out that if you look at our state, where is it? Went up. I lost the state. Oh, there is another blackboard there. See our bipartite state? We have these coefficients. These coefficients form a matrix. You can think of these coefficients as forming a matrix. So think of this as matrix M. And then we'll use the singular value decomposition of a matrix to write this entangled state in a canonical way. Yes?
What's the relationship between singular values and eigenvalues?
So eigenvalues, you only have them when the matrix is square. It has to be a square matrix. And these singular values apply to arbitrary matrices. Now, in the eigenvalue decomposition, well, it's a different decomposition. I will actually talk about eigenvalue decomposition in a minute. And you'll see that there is some relation. Yeah, can I answer in 5 minutes? So it's not the same as the eigenvalue decomposition. But we'll see that there is some relation between eigenvalue decomposition and singular value decomposition. So in the eigenvalue decomposition, I'm just hesitant here because, well, I'm going to use blue for the eigenvalue decomposition. So you would write this as some matrix N, some diagonal matrix D, and some other matrix N to the minus 1. So that would be the eigenvalue decomposition. Eigenvalue decomposition. And you can see, for instance, that there are cases where eigenvalue and singular value decompositions will be the same. For instance, if the matrix was Hermitian, so in the case where n, this n happens to be unitary, if n is unitary, right? And the, well, okay. I think, yeah, we'll get back to that. I'm just hesitant because I don't want to confuse people.
How about the significance of singular values with respect to matrix? What does it tell us?
What does it tell us?
What's its significance?
So I think that this will become very clear when thinking about entangled states, but basically imagine that when you see a matrix, you don't care about the specific values of the entries, but about properties that are invariant and the local, and the unitary transformation. So you take your matrix and you are allowed to transform it on one side by a unitary transformation, on the other side by another unitary transformation. And now you can ask, about quantities that are invariant under these transformations. So what about, what are the properties of your matrix that don't change if you apply unitary transformations on both sides? Okay? And the singular values are the answer. But we will see also that this singular value decomposition will tell us about how to break our matrix into, or write it as a sum of terms, each one being of rank one. You'll see that what I'm gonna be telling you in about 5 to 10 minutes, there is some intuition there of what it means.
The fact that the S's are positive, is that because for a particular class of matrices M, or is that?
No. The singular value decomposition is such that you can, the singular values are always positive. You can think of this is not a big deal, because if you had a minus sign here, so that would be a diagonal entry here, you can absorb it into the unitary transformation. Okay, so you can always use the unitaries to take care of signs or even phases. This, right, you could think, you could have a diagonal matrix made of complex phases. Just bring all whatever is not positive into the unitaries that you have. Okay, good. So let me also tell you one thing about the singular values here, which is that we'll be interested in, so given a matrix, we'll see that there are some singular values, S1, S2, SL, SKI, which are strictly positive, and then we can have SKI plus 1 all the way to SN, which might be equal to 0. So we call rank of M, the rank of the matrix, is equal to this number of non-zero singular values. Okay, I don't know if you are familiar with the notion of the rank of a matrix, but this is the same as saying how many linearly independent columns you have, or linearly, and it's the same as the number of linearly independent rows that you have in the matrix, okay? So the rank of a matrix is this notion, and then the singular values, it turns out that the number of non-zero singular values is equal to the number of linearly independent columns, which is equal to the number of linearly independent rows in the matrix. Okay, so maybe you can use this one. So what's the Schmidt decomposition? Well, the Schmidt decomposition of psi, and remember psi can be written as a bipartite pure state, can be written in this way. It's the Schmidt decomposition is going to be something of the form and let me explain this. So this Schmidt decomposition really is the key to all the practical calculations of entanglement in many body systems. One could think that you would base study of entanglement in a many body system in something that is more than just two parts, A and B, but actually in practice all the calculations, all the studies are based on and all the insight that we have gained, or most of it at least, comes from just understanding the bipartite case where you have part A and B. And this is, therefore, well, the Schmidt decomposition should write this Schmidt decomposition is going to be the key tool to characterize this bipartite entanglement in many body systems. So what is this? Let's see. Here what we have is the original generic wave function of two parts with coefficients, complex coefficients A, I, J. And now here, instead, we have coefficients that I'm going to, so these are actually probability, this piece, P1, P2, etc., Pn. These are a probability distribution. Normalized to one, okay? If you want to understand this normalization, just think of what the norm of psi is, and it turns out that it's just equal to this sum. And we are going to call these guys, we're not very original here, so these are going to be the Schmidt coefficients. And these guys here, these states are going to be the Schmidt bases. So we have two Schmidt bases, one for A and one for B. So the state, the set of states for A are orthonormal. And the same for the states in B. Okay, these are the Schmidt bases for A, Schmidt bases for B. Right, I wanted to do this more generally because one can generalize, one could analyze n times n, so different dimensions, but I'm just going to stick to n times n, so both going from 1 to n, okay, just for simplicity. Indeed, you can generalize all this to the case where the two dimensions are not the same, but I thought let's keep it simple, okay? All right, so this is interesting. Here we have n squared terms. This is a matrix, n times n, okay? In this decomposition, we only have n terms. So you can think of this as a diagonal matrix, right? And then the idea is that any state can be brought into this form where the Schmidt basis depends on the original state, okay? So every single state will have a different Schmidt basis. And then, as I said, we are not going to be very original here. The number of non-zero coefficients is going to be the Schmidt rank. Schmidt rank. So it's equal to the number of non-zero Schmidt coefficients. Okay, so why are we spending so much time with this decomposition? Well, actually, let me even spend more time. Let me give you a couple of examples. So it turns out that if we take a product state, right, example. If you have a product state, say 1, 1. This is already written in its Schmidt decomposition. You see, there is one state here, another state there. They form orthonormal bases. You can think of this as having a Schmidt coefficient 1 here, plus Schmidt coefficient 0 times 2, 2, etc. Okay? And these guys would form an orthonormal basis. But what's important here is that you want all the states that appear in part A to be orthogonal, all the states to be in part B to be orthogonal. And in this case, we just have one state. In part A, one state in part B, that's fine. It's orthogonal. So that would be example one. And another example would be this one. Okay. In this case, clearly we have the Schmidt. This is again this entangled state is in its Schmidt decomposition. Because 1 and 2 form an orthonormal set for A, and 1 and 2 for an orthonormal set for B. So now my question for you is, what about this state? Is this in the Schmidt decomposition? Okay. So what if I, that's right. Good. So what if I write it like this? -1 × 2. See, I'm absorbing this -1 into this. Oh, sorry, 2 and 1. They are not orthogonal. Okay. Why are they not orthogonal? So this is A, and this is B. This is A, and this is B. Are they orthogonal? So in part A, we have 1 and -2. They are orthogonal. And in part B, we have 2 and 1. They are orthogonal. Okay. So this is already in the Schmidt decomposition. Okay. And the coefficients, Schmidt coefficients here are square root of 2 and square root of 2. Yeah. And what's the Schmidt rank of this state? 2. So it turns out, I don't know if you see that, well, there is, one can make this parallelism much, much stronger because between singular value decomposition and the Schmidt decomposition, because the Schmidt decomposition is nothing but the singular value decomposition of this matrix, okay? And actually in the notes, I wrote everything explicitly. I thought it would be a bit involved to try to do it here, but you can read it on the notes. So basically, these guys, the Schmidt coefficients are nothing but the singular values of this matrix. Okay? And then, now we have a tool to know whether a state is entangled, right? Yang suggested before that we compute the reduced density matrix, and we look at the rank of the reduced density matrix, I guess, how many, whether it's rank 1 or not. But actually, we can also do something equivalent here, which is we take this matrix, okay, and we look at its rank. Okay, you perform the singular value decomposition of this matrix, and you see how many singular values you have that are non-zero. The rank of this matrix, if the rank is 1, you have a product state. If the rank is larger than 1, you have an entangled state. Okay. Any questions? So let me, yeah? I'm only going to talk about pure states today for simplicity, but yeah. For mixed states, it's much more confusing. I think Arthur, where is Arthur? Oh, yeah, you've been dealing with measures of entanglement for mixed states. So there is something to be done there, but it's not as clear cut as it is for pure states. All right, so more linear algebra. So let's get now to the eigenvalue decomposition. And in this case, what we have is an n times n Hermitian matrix. Yep. Sorry?
Is the Schmidt rank unique?
Yes.
But you said, so in this example, 1, 1, 1, 2, 2?
Yes.
The thing is, it looks like the Schmidt rank is 2, but actually 1.
It's 2. I cannot. It's not a product state. No, it's a good question, but that's what's nice about the Schmidt decomposition. But once you have it in this form, it's easy to see that the metrics that you would, the metrics Aij in this basis looks like it's a diagonal matrix. And once you have that the rank of this matrix is larger than one, you know that you won't be able to factorize it. Okay? So before we said, oh, if I see how to factorize the state into part A and B, then I know it's a product state. But what if I don't succeed? How can I know that somebody else will not succeed? And this is how. You just look at the rank of this matrix, and if it's larger than one, you know that it cannot be written as a product state. All right, so here, suppose we have an n times n matrix, which I'm going to assume that it's that this Hermitian. We don't need it to be Hermitian in order for it to have an eigenvalue decomposition, but I'm going to assume that this Hermitian because that's all I need. And so in this case, the eigenvalue decomposition can be written as is a way of writing your matrix, n times n Hermitian matrix, as a product of three matrices. And then V, again, is going to be unitary. And D, it's going to be diagonal. And these are the eigenvalues. Of matrix T. And if T is Hermitian, so T dagger equal to T implies that these eigenvalues are real. Okay. So linear algebra, eigenvalue decomposition. I'm sure you've seen this before. Now, why am I talking about it? So let me just write a small lemma that is going to be very useful. It says that if a matrix has the singular value decomposition, as we saw before, U S V daga, then we can build two matrices, M daga M and M M daga. These matrices are positive defined or non-negative defined. And then for each of these matrices, we can just come here and use the singular value decomposition to write. So we replace M dagger with the dagger of USV dagger, M with USV dagger. And what do we get? We get V S square V dagger. And on the other, in the second case, we get U S square U dagger. And interestingly, these matrices, these matrices here, so this matrix here and this matrix here, when we write them in this way, we automatically recover their eigenvalue decomposition. This is the eigenvalue decomposition, right? It's of these matrices. See, it's unitary, diagonal matrix. Remember, S were the singular values. This is diagonal. And V daga is unitary as well. So it's exactly of this form. Okay? So if they give you a matrix M, and this is its singular value decomposition, there is a relation between the singular value decomposition of M and the eigenvalue decomposition of M daga M and M M daga. Okay? And now we will see that this is that we will use this simple result from linear algebra to understand what's the relationship between the Smith decomposition of a bipartite pure state and the form of the reduced density matrices rho A and rho B. So what else do I want to say here? Well, just the observation that eigenvalues of both M dagger M and M M dagger, the eigenvalues of this guy are equal to the square. So these are, the eigenvalues are Si square, where Si are the singular values. Of M. Okay, so basically if we know M and we know its singular values, then we know also the eigenvalues of M dagger M and M M dagger. All right? And in particular, if we have, remember that we have a definition of rank. So the rank of the matrix will be the number of non-zero singular values, then we'll have the notion of rank of this other matrix, which will be the non-zero eigenvalues, and we see that it's the same. That the rank of these matrices, this matrix, and this matrix is the same as the rank of M itself. Okay? So I'm clarifying all this from the perspective of linear algebra, because now when we translate this into our analysis of a bipartite state, there is nothing but a translation of terms. But it's all the linear algebra unit is in here. Okay. All right, so we said that let's have a look at how this looks for our bipartite state. And again, I have it somewhere, but I think it's faster if I just rewrite it here. We have our generic bipartite state. And then we've said that we can write it in its Schmidt decomposition. Now we can compute the reduced density matrices. And when we do that, we see that we can express them in terms of the Smith basis. So what do we have here? We wanted to write the reduced density matrices, and it's very simple to write them once you have the Schmidt decomposition. When you take the partial trace, just choose the Schmidt basis to take the partial trace on, and you'll get to this expression. And what we see is that, well, there is a relation between the Schmidt coefficients, and you see this is already an eigenvector, eigenvalue decomposition of rho, right? These are orthonormal bases. So the eigenvalues of rho for rho A and for rho B are both the same, and they are just the squares of the Schmidt coefficients, okay? But that's nothing but what we just described before, when I said that singular values of that matrix were equal to the eigenvalues of these matrices were the square of the singular values of M. Okay, so what do we learn from all this? Well, for instance, if you wanted So from here, if you want to find the Smith coefficients of a bipartite state, what would you do? How would you find, what's a possible way of finding these coefficients? That's right. So you could just compute the reduced density matrix. So that's what Yang was suggesting before for one, for an entangled state, right? Compute the reduced density matrix, look at the spectrum, and you automatically learn how many non-zero eigenvalues you have, which is the same as how many Schmidt coefficient, non-zero Schmidt coefficients you have. Okay? Good. And from here, it also becomes clear that we talked about the Schmidt rank. So you see, what we see is that the Schmidt rank which was the number of non-zero singular value decompositions is equal to the rank of rho A of the reduced density matrix and is equal to the rank of rho B. Okay? It's always the same guys appear. Here we have probability distribution, the eigenvalues of a density matrix, and here we have the square root of the same numbers.
So you didn't catch this, but given the one on the left, how do you get the final on the right? How do you get distribution?
How do you go from here to here? So right, so one way you can do that is by just taking, remember the definition of partial trace, mm-hmm. Right? So given psi, if you want to compute rho A, for instance, this is trace over B, right? Now, you can choose in which basis you take the trace. There are many choices of basis. One that is very useful in this case is to take trace over pi bk. I'm sorry? You can always choose the basis you want, and if you choose this one, the calculation is very simple. Mm-hmm. But if you want, if you like hardcore mathematics, choose another basis, and then. But it's linear algebra. It's not that complicated anyway. So here, yeah. If you replace this with the Schmidt decomposition, then this you see that each of these terms picks up just one of these terms that will appear here. It generalizes, yes. That's right. So you will see, for instance, suppose that the first system has 2 levels and the second system has 1,000 levels. Then it follows from this discussion that the Schmidt decomposition can at most have 2 levels. The Schmidt rank will be at most 2, right? Because you need an orthonormal basis, an orthonormal set of states on part 1, which has dimension 2, so you can only find at most 2 states there. So this part can only have 2 states, and therefore this part doesn't matter how many states you want to have. There are only 2 that matter, right? Okay, so I think that I'm going to... Dennis, did you say I had 5 more minutes if I needed to?
Well, probably a
couple of, okay. So what I'm going to do quickly, I'm going to take 3 more hours. And oops. So what I want to do is I want to define the entropy. So now we have this result, right? We can write any bipartite state in this form, okay? And what will happen is that the only properties that, or the only quantities that are relevant as far as entanglement properties of the state are concerned will be the Schmidt coefficients. And what I want to do is I want to define the Shannon entropy. And this is something you'll see today during the tutorial this afternoon. So the Shannon entropy of a probability distribution is nothing but this expression. And then we have also the Rennie entropy. Index alpha, and this has this other this definition. And these quantities are used in classical information theory too, as a measure of amount of information containing a probability distribution. And what we're going to do is we're going to use the quantum version of these two quantities, of the Shannon entropy and the Rennie entropy. So the quantum version of the Shannon entropy is called the von Neumann entropy. And it's S of density matrix is given by an expression that generalizes this one. And then we'll have also the quantum version of the Rennie entropies. And this is going to be, well, the obvious thing, which I replace the probability distributions with rows, density matrices. Okay, and what happens then is that if we want to measure the entanglement of a bipartite state, what we will use is we'll use the entropy, von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix. Now we'll put here rho A, or rho B. We could, it's the same thing because they have the same spectrum. Same thing here. And then what we have to do is we have to change the name from von Neumann entropy to entanglement entropy. That's what we do. It's hard work. We will, whenever you hear about the entanglement entropy of a bipartite state, it just means it's the von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix for part A or for part B. Because since we've seen already that they have the same spectrum, rho A and rho B have the same spectrum, it will happen that the entanglement entropy, as measured by the von Neumann entropy for part A or for part B, these two entropies are going to be the same. Okay, and I'm going to leave it here. Yes. There is a tutorial this afternoon. Yeah.